Very interesting. Let's move on to the next topic, accounting options. I'd like to introduce you Sam Holland from Standard & Poor's, one of Osman's colleagues at Standard & Poor's. So,
thank you, Peter. Firstly, thank you for having me here today. It's a real privilege to be presenting to you. Just to very quickly introduce myself, I have a similar role to Osman at S&P. So Osman is our banking accounting expert. I wouldn't say I'm an expert, I do this the same job for the corporate group. And a big part of our energy is expended in trying to normalise companies' numbers and compare and contrast their performance and their financial position. So I'm a member of the AFRAG user panel, which I guess has in some ways a similar role to CMAC. We were asked to table agenda items of things that we care about as users, and accounting options and the different presentational choices companies can take, which leads to a lack of comparability, is a big thing for us. And it creates hurdles to analysis, and we have to spend time and energy and money, I suppose, adjusting numbers. So this paper is aimed to get your users as whether you agree with us that there are too many accounting options. If you don't agree, it would be great to hear why. And perhaps now is the time that we can seize the day with the Primary Financial Statements Project to have some kind of principle that would help to reduce the number of options. I won't go through the whole paper in detail, but a few important points is that the conceptual framework, the existing conceptual framework, does make the comment that financial information is more useful if it's comparable, and that alternative accounting choices diminish that comparability. We definitely agree with that, but nonetheless there are plenty of accounting options within IFRS. We're not saying, by the way, that all accounting choices should be removed. I think there are some very important cases where they are needed for different companies to tell their stories in a different way because of different business models. But lots of the accounting choices that you'll see in this paper, I think, are not adding too much to anyone, in my view, and could be removed. Just taking one example, which is the classification of cash interest paid and received and dividends received in the cash flow statement. So under IFRS, you can choose whether your cash interest paid is an operating cash flow or a financing item. With the interest received and dividends received, it can be operating or investing. And certainly the UK, maybe it's more of a UK issue than elsewhere, we see quite a few companies taking the latter view, which is different from the US GAAP view and different to the S&P view. We view all those cash flows as being operating. So table one shows you two telecom companies, two peer companies, presenting their operating cash flows in those different ways. Deutsche Telekom has them all as operating, Vodafone has them all as non-operating. If you were to reclassify the items for Vodafone to present in the same way that Deutsche does, it would increase their operating cash flow by £3.6 billion. Pounds or 58%, so a very substantial difference, which, okay, we're aware of this, we can adjust for it, but is there a risk that other users are less familiar with this and miss that point entirely? So I've got a few questions in here to maybe open it up at various points, but do CMAC members agree that presentational option is unhelpful, or is it something that you don't find an issue?
I think that as a credit investor and analyst, I have pretty strong feelings about this, and I think that you're right. I mean, there is inconsistency, and it's problematic, and it can distort information, and as much as possible, we'll make those adjustments. We tend to take the cash interest and put it in cash from operations, because when you look at free cash flow, generally the standard is, you know, the norm is cash, you know, CFO minus CapEx minus dividends. We're not going to try to change what the norm of the industry is doing. What I'd rather have is consistency, sort of find its way back to what the norm is. And I also think that we're global investors, we're know, being, you know, say US companies versus IFRS companies, it's much, much easier for us to have the confidence that when we're looking at a company that's under US GAAP versus IFRS, at least in this very, very important issue, that there was consistency across. So, you know, I'm very much in favor of not having the company have, you know, have the option. I also think cash interest belongs in cash from operations, simply because you think about what is the cash required on a daily basis for the company to run its business. Dividends are optional. I mean, some may not view it that way, but cash interest is not. And so it is, I realize it's financing, but the reality is that this is the cash you need to generate in order to run your business on a daily basis. You can't do that, then you fall over, you decline, or you lose enterprise value. And the final thing I would say on it is that, and it almost goes back to the discussion we had on communications, is that I'd like to see it on a quarterly basis as well as on an annual basis. So I find it's also true in US GAAP, it's getting information. Is there cash interest, is there on a quarterly basis, but not, you usually have a separate line that says cash pay for interest. I like that. But in any case, I think absolutely should be consistent and required, and I prefer CFO just so that there's consistency across the country or across the world.
I agree with Mitch. I definitely think the options is disturbing, although it's not a big problem in Sweden, because I would say probably 95% of the companies actually have the interest expense included in cash flow from operations. But actually, we have some UK companies on the Stockholm Exchange, among them AstraZeneca, the pharmaceutical company, and they have it included in the financing section. And the way I view it is more or less the same as you, but like cash flow from operation is something that you have and that you can affect, but it's not a choice. But the financing section is a choice. You can choose to issue shares, take up a loan, but you cannot choose whether you want to pay interest or not. And that differs the cash flow statement from the income statement. The non-choice part and the choice part. You can also choose to invest more or less, and so on. So to me, it's definitely part of the operations, and to have the choices, I don't like. Robert, no.
Covered enough, I'll come back later.
More time.
I struggle with this because I think somehow it would be great that, because we're now heading for a presentation, I fully agree that the option is something that we should get rid of. But where do you, which way do you end up then? Because I would prefer to see a linkage between operating profit and operating cash flow. And operating profit for normal industrial companies excludes interest expense. And I would consider, I would want to see, okay, these are your operating assets, and I relate those operating assets to your operating profit, and there should be a match, and that helps me in judging how efficient, how capital intensive or your operations are. If you then start mixing the operating cash flow with capital elements, it leads to distortion. So that doesn't mean that I don't agree with you that those interest expenses are fixed, and you cannot. But that's something different than assessing the performance. And I would like to see like a principle behind linking the balance sheet, cash flow statement, and the income statement. And somehow I fear that if we, yeah, but interest is something different. It's actually operating, it's not financing. Well, if interest is not financing, what is, you know? It's so I would be heading for linkage as a paramount principle for presentation, and indeed get rid of the option.
Tom?
Yes, some comments. I agree we need some consistency among across companies at reducing options in order to have the same level of analysis Second point is, if I look at interest, we have to present interest net, I would say, not net, but same place for interest paid and interest received. Because if you increase the debt by issuing new debt, you have maybe accept the difference in interest, but you doesn't change the generation of cash flow for the company, operating cash flow after tax and interest. Third point is that taxes is paid after interest. It's paid on results. So I think we have to put taxes and interest at the same place. And on my role, I would prefer to have something like an interest not the operating level, but cash from operation in the current context of the company, and be able to calculate a cash flow before interest and tax, because this is sometimes useful when you analyze companies.
Dennis?
Yeah, I haven't done kind of similar work that Sam done on accounting options, but my question would be, is this the only item that we should be looking at? And then I basically agree with Martijn's point, is that a piecemeal solution to particularly this item is not going to be very helpful when you think about how we're going to approach this from a principle. And then, yeah, I do believe a bit on what your preference is, also depending on where your perspective is. So you might have an equity or a credit perspective where you have a different preference over where the item is going to be presented. As I agree, if you have an equity perspective, then you look at the operating cash flow is going to value the business. And that might be not such a good idea to deduct the interest.
On the whole, I wouldn't get too ideological about trying to eliminate options and that kind of thing, because I think one of the problems we're always going to have in accounting standards is that what we're trying to do in accounting standards is to match financial reality or the reporting requirements to an economic reality. But very often, it's the economic reality that is disputed. It's not that there's a single economic reality. There are multiple versions of this. And that's what leads us to this idea that there are many options. For example, to give you a really good example of this, we tend to assume, because kind of we've grown up in the theory of the 1960s, where you have the operations and the financing, and that companies have an option as to how they choose to finance, and then you're basically managing the operations, so you have two kind of different concepts. But in many sectors, you don't have a financing option because of what your competitors are doing. So retailers very rarely get rid of their property for very good reasons. I mean, you could argue it's just a way of financing the operations of the business. They could choose not to own it, and they could lease it, etc. But it changes the whole dynamics of the competition between the retailers. So in effect, it doesn't become, it isn't a choice between operations on one side and financing on the other side. Everyone's forced down the same path, and it becomes a kind of single model merger of the two ideas. And the savvy investor has to keep this in mind, because your financial information will never allow the investors to escape the duty to understand what's going on here. And if you understand that that's the kind of constraint that industry operates under, and that to some extent in those sectors, those, in this particular case in retail, those rent burdens, they're kind of operating. They're kind of operational as well as financing, and to try and force it down one route or the other kind of is taking away something important, which is that it is a grey area. That's
Robert.
So I want to tease out, we're hearing two themes, and I want to tease out, the first comment I'm going to make to the sort of the standard setters is keep it simple, and because if you don't keep it simple, then the application comes off the rails. I'm of the opinion that it's a sometimes wrong classification is better than for the sake of consistency. So it's so important to get consistent information between companies that are comparable that in general, I think that the options should be eliminated. I looked at the full list of options, and my reaction, and I'll get to your point in a second, I looked at the options, I said yes, 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 and a couple I said maybe, and I thought about it, and I said, you know, for consistency, for all the ones that were presented, I'd go yes. Now, I want to come back to this point about, there are cases where options actually are needed, but I think that, if that really is the case, the board needs to stretch, needs to figure out why, what's the principle, what's really happening that all of a sudden one type of, one treatment, one recognition, one measurement, one disclosure format works, and for another one it doesn't. And it shouldn't, and those should be the exception. They're probably industry-based. I heard the board doesn't like to do industry-based, and I agree that that's right, but there's a fundamental difference between the business model from a bank and an industrial company. So we're going to see these differences. And the retail example is another one where we do struggle with some of these businesses that it is fundamentally different. So the sort of the summary is first get rid of most of the options that are provided. If you really think there's an option, then challenge the board needs to figure out what is the principle behind that, and put some guidance and put some principles around those things out there.
Maria.
Yes, just wanted to make two points. One following up from some very important issues that Dennis and Glenn brought up. I just wanted to flag that whenever you remove accounting options that basically deprive companies of showing their numbers in a way that they feel reflect economic reality, what inevitably happens is that they come up with more alternative performance measures. And we've had a lot of discussions about APMs, and people do feel that they add a lot of information, but they can also make things more confusing, especially for people who don't look at any one set of financial statements in detail, but maybe rely on research aggregators and so forth. So I don't think that tells us that we shouldn't be eliminating options, but it's definitely something to keep in mind. And on the specific example that you brought up, you can then easily have a situation where, you know, a company says, well, you know, we had a great operating cash flow, but because of some specific distortions in our interest result, you know, we had early discharge penalties or something, you know, it suddenly got distorted. And then you have two sets of operating cash flows that the company might end up reporting, and people might get a little bit confused, especially because there's also free cash flows and so forth. And then following up from what Martijn said, I also agree very strongly with that, and I think we should come back to the whole operating versus financing discussion later on today in the primary financial statements discussion, because ultimately any financing activity that companies undertake is needed to run the operations. So I think, you know, it's very arbitrary to say this part of financing is more linked to operations and this part of financing is more linked to financing. So I generally like to see everything that can somehow be classified as financing actually in the financial results and in the financial cash flow and so forth.
Okay, thank you. Doug?
Thank you. Thank you very much for good discussion. It's very helpful. And actually, the biggest problem about operating cash flow is we don't have the definition of operating income in the profit and loss, but we only have operating cash flow. That is the, you know, starting point of this problem. So therefore, we cannot really define what's the operating cash flow, so we allow some choices in the end. And the question is, as the Martijn pointed out, if we could provide a good principle about what the operation is all about, which is consistent all across the profit and loss statement and cash flow statement and balance sheet, that's the idealistic solution. So therefore, we are going to start with income statement in the primary financial statement, which we are going to discuss. The point is, how should we address industry-specific financial statement? So probably in the income statement, we may try to challenge the kind of industry-specific style of financial statement. And then if we could come up with some consistent presentation all across profit and loss statement and cash flow statement, that could be a solution. But in the end, we have to face the difficulty of how you define the
the banking industry, how you define insurance industry, how you define the kind of property industry, or what kind of presentation is most suitable for those industries. So therefore, what we could do to start with is to talk about the structure of financial statement, income statement, and start thinking about it. But my fundamental question is, currently we have operating cash flow. Are you using that operating cash flow in your analysis? I mean, to me, I have a little bit skeptical views to the our current cash flow statement. It's my personal view. However, it's one of the reasons is because we have option on the operating cash flow. But are you really using that operating cash flow in your analysis?
That's a very good question. But since I'm quite concerned about the timetable, we have to take that when we talk about financial statement presentation.
Thank you.
So, Mitch.
So, I'll try to be quick. I think it was Glenn who talked about sort of the statement should reflect the economic reality of business. I think the most important thing is the economic reality of the business and consistency. And again, if you look at companies, comparing companies on a global basis, you need that consistency. But on the cash interest in cash from operations, obviously I feel pretty strongly about it. At the end of the day, we need to understand. The income statement is very good at for all kind of giving a sense of sort of what is going on, but the cash flow statement tells you what the company needs on a consistent basis to open up a shop every single day. And if you don't include cash interest, then I think you inflate a company's ability to open up a shop every single day. You are required to pay the cash interest. And yes, maybe it is exactly financing, but the way to think of the cash from operations is exactly that. So what does the business need to generate, and what's that margin of generation to finance its CapEx and other investments to open up a shop every single day. It gives a long impression of what the company needs to turn on the lights.
Thank you. Paul?
Okay, I'm going to express rather a different view from most of what's been expressed around the table so far, and therefore I'm deliberately going to state it in quite a strong way, which is not necessarily my view. Or entirely my view, but I just want to get the point across. I think comparability is a false idol. Companies are different. That's the reality. Even if they're operating in the same industry, they are different. And if we try to stick all of them into the same box, we actually distort more than we reveal. Now, that would argue for more flexibility and less constraint. And I think our job as investors is, or as owners of companies at the very least, is to understand that individual company that we are choosing to own. And the question I think for the standard setter is, what sort of investor are you looking to facilitate and support? Are you looking to facilitate and support somebody who is just looking at the numbers and wanting to trade the shares, or are you wanting to facilitate and support the investor that wants to be an owner of particular companies? And that I think is the fundamental question, because clearly my argument that standards can distort more than they reveal would argue against the whole project of standardizing reporting and IFRS, and that's not where I am personally, but there will always be limits to how much we can standardize and how much we would want to standardize. And I think trying to make the box have too many constraints will, at its limit, go too far. And we need to work out exactly where that too far is. And it probably is at the individual issue level, rather than having a clear principle that we want to get rid of every option. Because actually, sometimes the options are necessary. So my view would be, you know, this is right to be dealt with on the individual issue level and within the broader primary financial statements project, rather than us asserting a clear view against options.
Peter, yours.
Yeah, I think most of the stuff that I want to say has been said, but I think discussion does show that whatever we want to do about this is related to primary financial statements and will have to be based on some guiding principle at the beginning. Like, do we want to define operations versus financing as a starting point of this whole debate? And if we don't do that, then I'm not sure what criterion we're going to use to sort of solve the issue here. The second thing, and actually Tuck brought it up, this is an area where evidence could help us understand whether we have a problem, yes or no. And you said, do we use? I was going to make it more broadly. Is there any evidence out there that people are fooled by this? And actually, a good friend of mine has written a paper on this, and I'll look up the reference when I have a moment here. But they've studied exactly this question: what companies do put certain numbers in which category, as you know, ex ante, and then ex post. Is anybody fooled by this?
Right.
So I think that should guide a discussion, you know, on do we have a real problem here? Going all the other points, sort of putting it together. Like, if there's no real problem, then you know we're kind of done, right?
I agree with that.
Goro, okay. One more time.
Yeah. Peter might be delighted. Evidence that people may not be fooled, but I think the problem is that I also agree that Paul's comment that every company is a different. But still, that we assume that the same sector or the companies within the same sector tend to have a very, very similar business model. That's the reason why we classify certain companies in, the same sectors. So I would say that I would prefer that the kind of more discipline here, how to classify that interests. That would maybe that we are not being fooled, but still we can reduce the time of analysis. By having the same treatment, and at the same time that depending upon the business model of the companies that we can adjust anyway that depending upon that what we believe that what is the company's economic reality, if that amount of interests and dividends are presented in the notes. So yeah, I agree that we need some kind of principles and guidance to, let the companies with a similar business model to classify that these interests or dividends in the same similar manner. The problem is like that the Deutsche Telekom's and Vodafone's case that I don't think that these companies have two different business models, but still they are treating that these items differently. That is my problem.
Thank you. Thank you. More time and then Sue.
I usually agree with all E, but sometimes I don't. Today I don't. For this subject, I don't. I really, if we look at our own industry, the asset management industry analyst, if anything, we have a sector focus. Analysts focus on a sector which allows them to compare companies within that sector, knowing that they deviate. But there is merit in comparing companies. If this paper of Sam Holland or S&P is, I see it as an effort of reducing unnecessary complexity introduced by a myriad of different choices. For some of them, there actually is little basis to have two choices. And I see great merit in reducing those choices. I think it will help many of the analysts in understanding, more easy understanding what's going on in the company, instead of second guessing, okay, but we have like these 25 choices all over the financial statement, presentation, in measurement, in whatever. And now it's our job to bring it to one comparable number. And that takes us 2 days. Well, let's get rid of those 2 days. And let's try to see if we can make it more efficient, more useful, and make sure that as much money possible is invested based on fundamental principles. And I think it will help us. So if the ISB thinks of adding a choice to accounting framework, I think that should be justified. Very, very thoroughly justified. Not say, okay, well, yeah, well, it's not really, both could present economic reality, why don't we do both? No, we lose something if you add a choice to the framework. So it should be extremely well justified why it's there, and if there's no really strong justification why it's there, one of them has to go. That would be my suggestion to the board.
Now, I think we'll do like this. Sue, Robert, and Carlos. And then Sam can stick to the rest of the paper, although this is a discussion much more related to the broader issue than just the specific issue. I think that then Marietta and Mitch can send it. So, Sue, please.
Thanks for the paper, it's interesting. And I think as a board member, I can assure you that we never ever make a choice to allow choices without really thinking hard about it, because as a philosophy, even if it's not written down somewhere, I think that we always think there needs to be a good reason for allowing the choices. And I think the ones that are presentation choices are probably a little bit easier for us to deal with, but a lot of these are really recognition and measurement choices. So for example, the example here on measurement of debt on the balance sheet, is it cost or fair value? In my experience, most situations where that option exists, it's because it's a structured debt instrument. So it's not as though it's going to ever be a vanilla instrument. If they don't measure it at amortized cost, they're going to have to bifurcate a derivative. So you're going to have a complicated thing going on, and that's been done because it's just easier to measure the whole thing. And so we've taken into account the cost for the preparers and trying to get the balance. And I think if we did have a principle, which I don't disagree with, but I think I hope everyone would agree, would always have to be subject to cost benefit. And when you look at some of the choices we've made, and we talk later on about the leasing standard, for example, I think our preference would have been that all leases get put on the balance sheet. Our preference would have been that it always be retrospectively applied, so we had consistency. But we had to get the standard done as well. So we needed to make decisions so that it was easier for people to get on board. And so we tried to make decisions where we didn't think it would be too harmful. So, for example, it shouldn't be a big difference in the amount recognised by excluding stuff with a life of less than 12 years or with a small value. And if people could do a retrospective application, that's, we thought, better information for users of financial statements, so we didn't want to prevent someone doing it. But I think it would have been pretty much impossible for us to impose that on everybody. So if we had to make a choice, we wanted to give you the better information if we could get it to you, rather than making everybody do what we thought wasn't such a good job. So it's always a very nuanced cost-benefit decision the board's making.
Thank you. Then we have Robert and Carlos, and then we continue with you, Sam.
So I need to take up Paul's comment, and I suspect that there's somewhat of an intellectual challenge that you've thrown down there. If you take this idea that companies are always different, and you take it to its logical extreme, then we would have information that is very, very company specific. And the logical is give people the GL. Simply give them all the information, let them figure it out, let them get the full detail. The reality, what we really are doing is we are forcing companies that are not the same to be compared. The whole process of financial reporting is, in a way, to shove square pegs into round holes so that we can compare them. And it's obvious that we lose something in that process. But that is the process. And your, you know, the position you argued is that there should be differences, is, you know, and you hinted that you're not completely in there as far as a cap, and I hear that there are differences, but fundamentally, we are comparing, we have X number of dollars to deploy, and do we give it to company A or company B? We must force those companies to be comparable to make a decision.
Peter, I must just respond to that.
Very, very, very.
I think I said that, Robert, because I think I said, you know, at the extreme, the argument I'm making would say, let's get rid of IFRS altogether, and that's clearly not what where I'm at.
And I recognize you hinted.
You're not allowed to comment upon it.
And the point I was making was that there will be a limit to the detail with which the standards go into it and the specificity that there is. There will need to be options at some point to allow the truth of the company to be revealed rather than hidden by the standards. Mm. And we need to take a view, I think, on an individual standard level rather than on an overarching level as to where that point is in each case.
Thank you. As a former journalist, I need to give the word to Carlos now.
Thank you. So just echoing Mitch's comments, I think comparability is a huge thing. And it's just very strange that, you know, you could get into a situation like the one you described, that, you know, two companies, same sector, would, you know, account for such an obvious thing differently. And then, answer to Tag's question, I think, you know, OCF minus CapEx, it's some sort of an alternative measure to, you know, it's some sort of a protection, you know, for analysts against alternative measures. So every time a company comes to you and give you, you know, some sort of an adjusted number, one of the main things I do is just looking at OCF minus CapEx.
Cash is cash.
So OCF is very, very important. And it's cash, it's reality, cash is the truth. And again, on your point on, you know, if interest should be financing or not, I would be a little bit more practical. It's, you know, most of the time it's part of cash flow, so it's probably not worth it, you know, changing it all, even without getting to where it's the right place or not. It's probably not worth it.
Okay, then we can let Sam continue.
Thanks. Now, I won't go through the rest of the paper in detail because I think we've covered most of the material, but just to make a few points. I really agree with the way Martin put it before, which is that because there isn't this consistency generally in IFRS, some users, certainly S&P, expend a lot of energy adjusting numbers where we could be using our efforts perhaps more usefully. And I think you know, because there are no principles that engender that consistency within IFRS, we create our own. And actually, they're not rocket science, they're not that hard to implement, and then I don't think that it would be impossible for something similar to be done under the primary financial statements project. So, For our own EBITDA measure, which is very important to our analysis, we have a cohesiveness principle where we look at the cash flow statement classification to inform whether a gain or loss should be operating or not, because perhaps perversely the cash flow statement is more uniform than the income statement. So if a cash flow has been or will be financing or investing, such as the gain on sale of subsidiary or PP&E, we view the P&L effect of that transaction as non-operating as well. And that works remarkably well in delivering consistency. So something like that, some kind of principle that may have parallels with that, I think would work quite well with primary statements. The other point is that previous decisions taken by the board have indicated that, you know, cash was not the right time to fix these issues, but that some kind of financial statements project would be. So pensions interest is another example that we have to adjust for because it's often shown as operating rather than financing. The revised IS 19 standard exposure draft suggested it would be mandated as being financing, but then it was reversed at the last minute, and the basis of conclusions explained that there were knock-on effects that would cause problems, but this could be looked at as a as part of a primary financial statements project. So I think this could be the right time to seize the day. And of course, seems right that we can't remove all options, and there's a complex trade-off with any new standard in getting people over the line. But I do think that many of these options in Table 2 are purely presentational and actually don't add a great deal for users or preparers in how they tell their story. They're just differences that have arisen through random developments over time. And many of them, I think, could be addressed through this project. So, we're very passionate about this opportunity, that some kind of principle could be introduced as part of that project. And not all, but some of these options eliminated, hopefully.
Okay, thank you. Then we can go over to Marietta.
Thank you. So I would just like to give the ISB board a guiding principle on how to go about thinking about this optionality. And just philosophically, I wanted to follow on from Robert. I don't quite agree with your statement that the main purpose of financial statements is comparing. To me, the main purpose of financial statements and generally all of the information that companies release is actually forecasting companies, and we have huge issues here because the regulators are not quite on board, and a lot of the information we need for forecasting purposes is actually missing. And that's not so much an IFRS issue, it's more of a regulatory issue. But I would actually, I think the healthiest approach to analyzing companies would actually be to build a full model, do a reverse DCF, and then compare based on the implied terminal growth rates to see whether people are over or under optimistic for companies relative to each other to sustain their earnings momentum. And just like Paul, I don't have very much sympathy for investors who just apply random multiples to random consensus data, and then, you know, if they don't get, if what they buy is not what they see, then that's their own problem. But still, even investors who look into financial statements in a lot of detail, try to really understand the company, they first need to get to the point where they feel that this company is really worth looking into. And the reality is that investors need to use all sorts of screening tools. So I think one very important guiding principle would be to say, does this option actually affect a number that investors use to determine whether a company is cheap or expensive, whether it looks healthy or unhealthy? Because you don't want companies to sort of, you don't want to race to the bottom where companies basically fudge their accounting to look great in the screening process, or companies that are more honest to basically fall under investors' radars because they don't screen as looking particularly inexpensive. But I think that should really be the guiding principle. Is this going to affect a number that investors use in that initial process? And I think for the most part, that would really be more about the P&L. I mean, what people mainly look at is things like sales, EBITDA, EBIT, EPS, maybe growth rates, maybe general sort of net debt leverage issues. I'm not sure that, you know, the particular example you mentioned about the operating cash flow and where you put the interest, that would really make a huge difference to the screening process.
I think that and what we hear a lot of is viewed through the eyes of equity investors, and the cash flow statement is hugely important, and it is to equity investors as well when you drill down to that second level in terms of DCF and this kind of thing. But we can't underestimate how important the cash flow statement is. You know, obviously, I'm a credit guy, but I don't think we hear enough of it because there aren't enough credit guys. So I'll just speak loudly, but and often. And you might have to pitch that just so I won't talk anymore. Flexibility, we think about flexibility is good for companies because it allows them to tell the story, but maybe it's because I'm a credit guy, I think it gives them flexibility to hide the story. and that's the key point here, and I earnestly believe that. I mean, we are, all too often you're giving companies flexibility to hide the story. So that's why the consistency is important. Having said that, I agree on the principles point that Martijn's made, but at the end of the day, I think it's good to have it as a backdrop so that if there are violations of those principles, you've got something to fall back on. But I still think that, fine, so there's some flexibility needed, but you really need to be careful about what you do with that, because giving companies too much flexibility allows them to hide the story that we're trying to untangle. And all too often we find it, quarters and quarters after the reality of the weaknesses started to emerge. So I agree on the principal's point, but that is a good backdrop so you can provide the pushback. So you've violated this principle, but you need some tightness and you need in certain specific situations like the cash flow statement. I think there were, I don't have it in front of me, I read it last night, but on a few more of those items, I got quite a few of those S&P adjustments. And that's the point, just keep in mind the flexibility of companies' ability to hide deposits, and that's what we're trying to avoid. Much more cynical and skeptical about companies. We just need to tell our story. It's like, you're trying to hide your story. You don't want to give the tools to do that.
By the way, sorry. The paper here talks about the choices that companies make, and they link it to probability of financial distress, leverage levels, accessing equity markets more frequently. So there are these economic factors that drive the choices that companies make in terms of classifying. So.
I mean, you should see the stuff we see when a company is selling a new bond deal. I mean, it's shocking.
Wow. Okay, so now it's me. If I go through this list, Sam, to me, it's different animals that you are putting up, like below or about operating profit. What I have in Sweden are companies having operating profits, all of them. So this classification issue that we have addressed several times is not an issue in Sweden. Whether it comes above or below operating profit, I cannot really see is the same kind of question as when you have IAS 19 and pensions. Because I've never understood why the interest cost, the discounting of the liability should be operating. We borrow money from the pensioners. So obviously we have to pay them interest. So that kind of option I cannot really understand. The other one I can understand. And I think the improvement that you suggest having in the cash flow statement, if we have discontinued operations in the income statement, we should also have discontinued operations in the cash flow statement. Otherwise, the cash flow statement becomes not really comparable. It's not the same company, really, that we are analyzing. So there are different animals included in this, which I think complicates a final decision. Should we eliminate all options? Some of them, yes, but not all of them. The other factor about comparability and flexibility, I will give you an example from the Swedish market. Until 1997, we had what we call the funds flow, a cash flow statement. And you could put that together however you liked. There were a standard issued by the auditors that no one cared about because it wasn't mandatory. And if you looked in the annual reports, forget about the quarter reports. It wasn't even close to the quarter reports. If you looked in the annual reports, none of the companies presented the same funds flow. None. Absolutely none. So it was useless material. It was not information. It was something else. It was a buzz that came at you. And to me, it guides me that we need some kind of rule-based something.
Yeah.
Well, on what kind of level we should put the detail. I think you have given us a lot of examples that I agree upon, some that I don't agree upon, but I think this is an issue. And I think we need to strive to eliminate options, because mostly I can read into the options that, okay, if we give the accounting standard an option, everybody's pleased. Everybody will get some of it. But we have always done like this. No, but we have always done like this. So, to have a goal to eliminate options, I think, is a very achievable goal and something that I definitely sign on. Dan, finally, I thought I was finally. The last word.
I'll just be quick. I think the other thing that needs to be addressed here is where there are options. Companies need, I think, identifying where there are options is important, because I think you could also force companies to do a better job disclosing where they've chosen alternative options. You know, gains on sale of businesses is a good one. A lot of times there's a gain on sale of a business in operating profit, and there's no indication that it occurred in operating profit. We looked at a company last year, and they actually put the gain on sale of their factory in as a negative cost of sales. So flexibility and providing something. I think you know, identifying where there are options, and then you know, really emphasizing those situations where there are options, and then disclosing which choice you've made is equally important. I think the cash flow interest and dividend thing to me is a no-brainer. It should be, you shouldn't have a choice there. But I think again, if you have a choice and it's in your financing line, you can't lump it in with some other stuff so that you can't see where it is at all. So I think there are cases where even if you know that there's a choice, you don't know what the company's choosing. So I think disclosure would really help there.
Okay, thank you, Sam. And thank you everybody for all the questions and everything that you have put forward. Now we will have a more or less 10 minutes break.